Hello again, kings and queens of the ring. Welcome back to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, your first lady of professional wrestling. And you are listening to the weekly pro wrestling podcast with a queer twist. I am Poyo Del Mar, a journalist with the Huffington Post and a longtime professional wrestling fan. And I am excited to be bringing to you each and every week my perspective on professional wrestling, as well as in-depth interviews with some of our favorite pro wrestling celebrities. This week, I give an arm drag takedown of the final two Raw and SmackDown episodes heading into this year's WWE Survivor Series, as well as take a look at what's going on Impact Wrestling in its first televised product, post Bound for Glory. And just so you're not surprised, I'm going to tell you right now, this week's episode of Impact included one of my favorite recent developments happening in Impact, and something I've been looking forward to for quite a while. All of that and much more coming later in this hour. Additionally, I could not be more excited about this episode's professional wrestling celebrity guest. Later in this episode, we will be joined by two-time Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, former Impact World Heavyweight Champion, and recently released WWE Superstar, Austin Aries, to talk about his new book, Food Fight, My Plant-Powered Journey from Bingo Halls to the Big Time, plus his views on what's taking place in the world of professional wrestling, what life is like after WWE, his thoughts on some current superstars, including Cody Rhodes and others, and much, much more. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown, and I'm Poyo Del Mar. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Never miss an action-packed episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. Follow Arm Drag Takedown on social media. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. It's ADT with PDM. ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. All right, everybody, we are back with more Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I am Poyo Del Mar, the host of your weekly podcast with a queer twist. Of course, don't worry, if you're not members of the LGBTQ community, we are all inclusive here, and this is just about our shared love of professional wrestling. This week on Monday Night Raw, the final Raw heading into this weekend's SummerSlam activities, kicks off with Stephanie McMahon in the ring to berate Kurt Angle for his decision to place Jason Jordan, his storyline son, as the fifth member of Team Monday Night Raw. As she is running down the fact that John Cena has joined Team SmackDown as its fifth member and appears to either be getting ready to relinquish Kurt Angle as the team captain for Raw, she is cut off by the Shield who enter the ring. Well, of course, everybody is excited. No. I wish that this was a print version because I could, like, do a strike through of that. Some people are excited about the return of the Shield as a trio, and we get them in the ring. They are backing Kurt Angle's decision makings. Meanwhile, of course, Stephanie has to walk a fine line during her promos because she can't be too mean, she can't be too bullying, because of course she is head of WWE's anti-bullying campaign, but she is making a point that Team Raw has its pride on the line as they face SmackDown. The Shield gets behind Kurt. And what I would like to say, my takeaway from this opening segment, other than it ran about 8 minutes too long, is that Stephanie McMahon cuts a promo that's 10 times better than even the best one I've ever seen from Roman Reigns. I know there's fans of Roman Reigns out there, and I know that people don't like when others run him down. I do think the guy's a great in-ring performer. If you go back a few episodes, I mentioned that I had watched Raw one time by accident with the Spanish broadcast team on, and as I was trying to figure it out, Roman came on the TV. I didn't understand most of what was being said about him, and I actually enjoyed watching him, for the most part, in the ring as a competitor without having all of his propaganda stuffed down my throat. as long as I don't have to hear the guy speak, and as long as I don't have to hear all of his catchphrases and the announce team blow him up too much, I'm okay with him. But overall, let me just tell you, not very, very interested in the Shield as a whole. I do wish that they collectively would make a heel turn. It would make it so much easier to deal with Roman Reigns. I think that he'd be much better off. And if Seth Rollins was speaking for him or on his behalf more often than not, I'd be okay with it, I think. Regardless, as this storyline plays out later in the hour, I'm just going to skip around because I'm not going to do this chronologically. Ultimately, Kurt Angle is forced to call Jason Jordan to the ring and presumably fire him from his role on Team Raw. Well, he's pleading, oh, Dad, don't do it, don't do it. And by the way, I saw this in HD. Damn, Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle have bad skin. HD is not the friend of a professional wrestler. In fact, I mean, hello, it's not the friend of a drag queen either, because nobody wants to be seen in HD, but it is really not very flattering. That's a side note. Ultimately, Kurt Angle can't bring himself to fire his son. Oh, Dad, this is my big chance. This is my big break. I'll never get this opportunity again. Well, maybe you will, but this is just not the time for you, kids. Sorry about it. Meanwhile, they're cut off. And who enters the ring but none other than Triple H? Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes to the ring to fire Jason Jordan, tell Kurt Angle he is fucked up and that he is joining Team Raw this coming Sunday at Survivor Series. Ultimately, just for good measure, Triple H turns around and delivers a pedigree to Jason Jordan. So, I guess, kid, you are really, really out of commission. It was nice of them to give Jason Jordan a mild injury angle, which could play towards the decision-making to remove him from the team. But we all know that he was thrown into the mix just to get his name up there in the possibility of a main event level push. But he's nowhere near that just yet. I mean, the kid's progressing nicely. Don't be too harsh on him. He's doing okay. He's doing the best he can with what he's been given. But overall, this angle, so to speak, is... I'm not sure if it's making people interested in him or turning people against him. In the long run, I have to say that I believe that they're going to have to put Jason Jordan in a match against Kurt Angle, probably at WrestleMania, a father versus son match, where Angle gets to pass the torch to his storyline son, Jason Jordan. That's what I'm going to call now. I'm seeing it. Call me Miss Cleo, but I see it in the cards. Also on Monday Night Raw, we saw Bayley pick up a triple threat victory over Mickey James and Dana Brooke to join Team Raw's women division as they face Team SmackDown on Sunday at Survivor Series. There was a lot of buzz on the internet about the possibility of Paige returning for this particular show somehow to wind up on Team Raw for SummerSlam. It did not happen, but I'm foreseeing the strong possibility that Paige will make her return at SummerSlam to be some kind of a deciding factor in the SmackDown versus Raw Women's Division 5-way match. Also in the first hour, we got to see Cruiserweight champion Enzo Amore and Drew Gulak pick up a victory over former champions Kalisto and Akira Tozawa. The one thing that I take away from this was actually a really well-done match. It was exciting, high-flying. I enjoyed watching it. But my biggest takeaway was exactly how entertaining Drew Gulak can be in comparison with Enzo Amore. They make... I'm not a huge fan of Enzo Amore sometimes, but I think they make a great combination because unlike what we got to see when he was paired with Big Cass, which was like two morons playing against each other, making things only more moronic, you've got Drew Gulak who totally shifts the pace of what's happening every time they cut a promo. It's much more entertaining when it goes back and forth this way. They play off each other really well. And honestly, in the promo before the match, I'd have enjoyed to see more Drew Gulak. But I think he's starting to probably pick up a little bit of a rub because of the fact that he is getting to be in the ring, share the spotlight a little bit with Enzo. And I think it's going to do good things for him in the long run. Hour two of Raw kicks off with a Miz TV segment, where Miz and the Miztourage are interviewing The Bar, the newly crowned three-time WWE Tag Team Champions. Cesaro in that mouthpiece when they're doing promos is a lot, but I really see them running with this because it gives something extra. It gives a little comedic flair to a team that is otherwise just sort of two badasses. I actually really like the chemistry between the Bar. They've done really well taking this impromptu team of two superstars that have done well in the solo world, making them a truly memorable tag team together. And it sets up, of course, later on for their match against the Shield. And then we go to an in-ring competition between Jason Jordan and Bray Wyatt. It's the first time we've seen Wyatt back in a few weeks in the ring. And it is Jason Jordan's opportunity, apparently, to prove that he should be on Team Raw. We've already discussed the fact that ultimately he gets the boot, but he picks up a victory over Bray Wyatt in a roll-up. I was kind of shocked by this, to be honest, and my big issue with this really is that they are just misusing Bray Wyatt on Raw, in my opinion. He came off of SmackDown like red hot on that brand, came over and he's cooled, and now they just started this new thing where he is Sister Abigail, right? And he's supposed to be in this thing with Finn Balor, but that's been put on the back burner now because Balor is in the main event at SummerSlam in this five-way match between Raw and SmackDown. So they've paused this, and now he's facing Jason Jordan. He drops with a roll-up victory for Jason and then slams Jordan's leg against a ring post, which is going to give, of course, Kurt Angle at least a plausible out for booting his son from the team. And guess what? The crowd is all over it. They chant, "Thank you, Wyatt. Thank you, Wyatt," prompting Booker T to say, "This crowd is not being very kind right now." Really? Mm-mm. Well, I think it's a sign that this forced type of storyline isn't working for the kid. I do understand what they're doing. It's the slow build method. We've seen it many times before. Kurt Angle himself received such a slow build. After coming in red hot, he got these nice series of close call losses to major stars before he started picking up big wins. They seem on track with that with Jason Jordan, but I can't help but laugh. The audience is letting their feelings be known. The WWE Universe has spoken. The advocate for WWE Universal Champion Paul Heyman comes to the ring to give us the top five reasons why we need to subscribe to WWE Network. It's great. They finally have a celebrity spokesperson for the network. They've got him out there pimping this big match at SummerSlam, headlining. It's WWE Universal Champion Brock Lesnar versus newly crowned two-time SmackDown World Champion AJ Styles. It's a first-time-in-history match. It's going to steal the show, I can guarantee that. But the highlight of this, the crowd disrupts his promo by chanting, "She said yes, she said yes." Apparently, somebody proposed to his girlfriend. She said yes, they interrupt. But Paul Heyman is such a pro. He stops the promo, reads the crowd for filth, reads the new groom-to-be for filth, and says, "You know what? Interrupting my promo is like stepping into the ring with Brock Lesnar. You can't win." Boom, bitch. She said yes, but he shut your ass down. As far as AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar, this is going to be a killer match. I am really genuinely looking forward to this. It is going to steal the show. AJ Styles gets to play the true underdog in this match, and I will talk about that a little bit more when I give the arm drag takedown of SmackDown momentarily. After an admittedly good, surprisingly good to me, match between The Miz and The Bar versus the newly reunited Shield, the Shield picks up a victory with a pinfall on The Miz after a triple powerbomb. Now, it's interesting to note that Miz is going into his match with Baron Corbin on Sunday. It's champion versus champion. They've had a great war of words on Twitter, but I mean, it's hard for me not to give this away. Corbin picks up a victory over Sin Cara on the Tuesday episode of SmackDown. So Miz is going into this pay-per-view with a pinfall loss, whereas Corbin is coming in with a pinfall victory. You have to, though, look at the fact that Miz is in with three of the top names on Raw, and Corbin is struggling in a feud against Sin Cara, who until recent weeks we hadn't even seen hide nor hair of. I wouldn't say that he is a top contender in anybody's mind. It's been positioned as an upset every single time he's defeated or even held his own against Corbin. So who is actually going to this match with the upper hand clearly is The Miz. He's got the better competition. Even though he lost on Monday Night Raw, he still did very well against three of the biggest names in the wrestling industry today. What I would like to see come from this alliance that we've seen briefly between The Miz and The Bar is after SummerSlam settles down, I would love, love, love to see The Miztourage, Curtis Axel, and Bo Dallas be placed in a position where they actually become bona fide contenders for The Bar's WWE Raw Tag Team Championships. I think that it is time to pull the trigger and give this team a real push in the tag team division with Miz acting as their manager slash partner. It's not a matter of ever being unable to do what people would like to see in terms of in-ring performance. It's always been a lack of charisma, interesting character, or promo skills that's kind of held both of those men back. And The Miz is the solution to that problem. This could be a great partnership where we could see The Miztourage holding three of the biggest titles on Raw. I'm all for it. I don't know about anybody else out there, but I am for it. I really like Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas as a team. And every time I see Axel in the ring, I'm reminded of one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, which is Arn Anderson, not his father, Mr. Perfect. Mr. Perfect, also one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. But the fact is that there's something about Curtis Axel physically that reminds me so much of Arn Anderson. It's just a great throwback, and I wish the Miztourage had a better name, but I love what it stands for, and I like them as a trio. I would love to see them moved into real title contention. We also got a fun throwback to the 2004 title match between Lita taking on WWE Women's Champion Trish Stratus. Trish still had a face brace on from after having her nose broken in a storyline. It was just a fun throwback. Trish and Lita are icons at this point. I'm so fortunate to have interviewed Trish in the past. I'm optimistic, fingers crossed, that someday soon I'll be able to get her to agree to come here to Arm Drag Takedown and talk. But it was always good. It is always good to see and remember what kind of fire those two women brought to every single match they had. Oh, Trish, Lita, from me to you, thank you for everything you guys have contributed. We also get to see Finn Balor teaming with Samoa Joe to take on Balor's former Bullet Club buddies, the Good Brothers. That's Anderson and Gallows, former WWE Tag Team Champions. I'm really torn on the way Anderson and Gallows are being used currently. I think they either need to switch brands or get the hell out of WWE. I just see things going way downhill in terms of the value of their stock if they continue going forward. Of course, Joe and Balor pick up the victory heading into the 5-on-5 SummerSlam main event, Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. Then we go to our main event, which is going to be Braun Strowman facing off against Kane after Kane had him thrown into a garbage truck and trash compacted. We all know that happened a few weeks ago after the last pay-per-view at TLC. But ultimately, the show ends with Braun Strowman power slamming Kane through the floor of the ring yet again. If it's not one thing or another, they're really, really doing the most. They are doing the fucking most, you guys, in terms of these events where Braun Strowman either breaks through the side of a cage or breaks the ring or causes the ring to collapse. It's a little bit of a go-to at this point. It feels a little gratuitous. Regardless, they've given Braun a major push heading into SummerSlam, which will continue momentarily when I tell you this week's Arm Drag Takedown of SmackDown Live. Action kicks off with Shane McMahon in the dressing room giving the SmackDown roster a big pep talk leading into Sunday. I found this a little bit irritating, but nonetheless, it sets the stage. SmackDown is ready. They're excited. He's got them all pumped up. And then we move to in-ring action. Well, at least in-ring discussion as Daniel Bryan comes to the ring to introduce newly crowned WWE World Heavyweight Champion AJ Styles. Then he offers the WWE champ an opportunity to have a personal advocate for the evening. He makes fun of Paul Heyman, and they cut a great promo. The interesting thing is, I find it really ironic and funny because one of the things that AJ says is he's not a puppet like Brock Lesnar is. He doesn't need Paul Heyman to do the heavy work for him in terms of promos. That is one of the things that I thought was the difference. AJ Styles can cut a promo. I guess that they're probably hyping the fact that there is some rumor going around that Daniel Bryan could return to in-ring action soon. Nobody knows the status of his in-ring, like his in-ring clearance. We don't know if he's cleared to compete or not, but there's been some discussion, as many people who follow the internet know, that Daniel Bryan could be back in the ring for at least one more match. Could we see it at SummerSlam? I'm not sure. I think they'd probably hype it a little more than just a last-minute appearance, but it's a possibility. Meanwhile, we then go to WWE U.S. Champion Baron Corbin finally getting a pinfall victory over Sin Cara. Sin Cara put us up a good match. I loved when the SmackDown announce team acted like Sin Cara could possibly be switched into this match against The Miz at the last minute. That's not going to sell a ticket anywhere, maybe on the indie circuit, but certainly not on the WWE pay-per-view. So it remains to be seen who will come out on top in the battle between The Miz and Baron Corbin. I don't know. I personally just don't see what WWE sees in Baron Corbin. I don't see the same thing in the guy that they do. That's obvious. And I really love the fact that a few weeks ago on Twitter, as well as I believe on WWE television, The Miz said, "You're just a generic big man," and damn if that doesn't hit the nail right on the friggin' head. As I called it last week, we also saw Charlotte Flair pick up her first SmackDown Women's Championship victory by making Natalya submit to the figure eight. It was a very good back and forth match. I host another podcast. It's a general LGBTQ pop culture podcast, and I happened to be with my co-host Pearl Tease that evening. We were recording in her home watching SmackDown. I forced her to watch this particular match between Charlotte and Natalya. It was a great match. She's a casual professional wrestling viewer, so she knows Natalya's father and her uncle, Bret the Hitman Hart. She knows Charlotte's dad, Ric Flair. It was interesting to watch wrestling through the eyes of somebody who is just a casual viewer, so I thank her for watching with me. But ultimately, Charlotte does pick up the victory. I said a while back that it makes far greater sense to have Charlotte, the face, going against Alexa Bliss, the heel, at SummerSlam. It'll be a very interesting confrontation. The two women, size-wise, are dramatically different. Charlotte is about 5'10", 5'11". I've interviewed Charlotte in person. I met her and interviewed her prior to WrestleMania a couple of years ago. I am just at 6 foot tall, and Charlotte was pretty much eye to eye with me. She was wearing a pair of like 2-3 inch heels, and we were eye to eye. Alexa Bliss, as everybody knows, is called 5 feet of fury. There is a huge size differential, so watching this match is going to be very, very interesting. I do think that it's funny how they barely got to engage in this kind of a particular match or feud while Alexa was still on SmackDown as the women's champion. Now we get to see them head-to-head, champion versus champion. This is, by the way, I believe, Charlotte's fifth championship reign in WWE. She's a one-time Divas champion, three-time Raw women's champion, and now one-time SmackDown women's champion. Only the second woman in history behind Alexa Bliss to hold both brands' championships. Of course, in the long run, we all know that Charlotte is going to probably become a 16 or 17-time women's champion. They're going to do for her what her father was able to accomplish. She's going to go down in women's history as the female version of Ric Flair. It goes without saying. I thought it was particularly touching that she made this speech directed to her father's health situation, and it was obvious that they shocked and surprised her with her father making an appearance at the show. At one point in time, when she's hugging him, you can hear her whisper to him, "Oh my God, you made it, Dad." It was very, very moving. Such a wonderful night. It's also a little bit surprising, given WWE's history of making most people drop their matches in front of a hometown crowd. But with Charlotte, almost every single time she is in Charlotte, she picks up a championship. So apparently, the going mentality for wrestlers losing in front of a hometown crowd does not apply to the Flair family. Congratulations, Charlotte. They're gonna kill at SummerSlam. Next up was Jay and Jimmy Uso cutting a promo on Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. Ultimately, Jay picks up a pinfall after a super kick over Chad Gable. They're really pushing for this feud to continue, presumably after SummerSlam, between the Usos and this Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin combo. I'm not really hip on American Alpha 2.0, as the Usos called them. And I think that's kind of accurate. I think WWE Creative needs to give these guys an identity. If we're going to buy into them, they need some kind of an identity. And I think that identity crisis was one of the problems they faced with American Alpha to begin with. They're a very talented team, two extremely athletic men, a good team together, obviously accomplished. But in terms of my personal buy-in to the team, my emotional investment, it was pretty minimal with the guys. So I'm finding myself in a similar boat with Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable. I do think that ultimately they are going to pick up the championships. I think that they need to provide new competition for when the New Day returns back to the tag team ranks and begins once again focusing on the tag belts. Word on the street is that the New Day is going to become a history-making team in terms of the number of title reigns that they have. So, you know, ultimately they're going to need a number of different teams to be brought up and become viable. I think that probably next up right now is Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. By the way, in terms of teams on the scene, it was announced that the Bludgeon Brothers will be making their televised debut next week on SmackDown, which is broadcasting on Thanksgiving. The Bludgeon Brothers, it's already been announced, will be facing the Hype Brothers. Please, can somebody just bludgeon the shit out of those two? Because I don't really give a fuck about either one of them. So, woo, woo, woo. Well, I can't say that. I actually like Zack Ryder a lot more than I like Mojo Rawley. But yeah, in terms of a team, not interested. So go ahead, rip them to shreds, you guys. Make a good showing and send them away. Finally, in the main event, we got the New Day versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It's interesting to note because Zayn and Owens, the internet blew up because they got sent home from the recent European tour because after last week's SmackDown, allegedly, WWE was very, very unhappy with the fact that they would not put over the New Day big. What I have personally read is that Owens and Zayn were supposed to take a real beatdown from New Day, setting them up in a way to make them look really credible against the Shield, but they sort of no-sold that. They decided against it, and they walked out. They took matters into their own hands, and it pissed people off, so they got sent home. This is in light of reports that Owens and Zayn have become increasingly difficult backstage. Apparently, they are, in fact, real-life besties. They've also been really close with other people who have recently either left and or have been rumored to be interested in leaving WWE. And it could be that they are either going to get some of their way in terms of what they would like to be and how they would like to be portrayed on television, or they're going to take their ball and go. As it stands, they are not even booked on SummerSlam, which is kind of surprising. Meanwhile, this match goes back and forth for a little while before, ba-doom, drumroll please, The Shield appears on SmackDown, leading Raw's invasion of the SmackDown roster. They get into the ring to confront the New Day. Initially, Zayn and Owens stand side by side with them. And then, they back off, allowing the Shield to attack. The surprising part about this was that the New Day was like, what the fuck? Where are you guys going? Well, you guys are in a fair fight. It's 3-on-3. Why do you need them at your side? Why do you need them to protect you? So ends up, the New Day gets beat down by the Shield. Then suddenly, an entire Raw locker room empties into the arena. The women attack the women in the dressing room area, beating them down. Alexa Bliss takes out Charlotte Flair, the newly crowned champion, with a big shot to end that. And then we cut back to the ring, where the men are in a massive melee, ultimately leading to Kurt Angle, the Shield, and Braun Strowman standing over Shane McMahon as they give him a beatdown. Kurt Angle delivers an angle slam. There's a series of one power bombs from the Shield, and Braun Strowman levels everyone. They've unleashed the beast, so to speak. They've let loose the monster on the Raw from the Raw brand on SmackDown. They stand over everyone as we lead into Sunday's big pay-per-view. SummerSlam is looking like one of the hottest pay-per-view events of the year. Going back to the earlier discussion of Daniel Bryan, there is speculation that this gang violence, if you will, against Shane McMahon is going to keep him out of competition on Sunday, opening the door for Daniel Bryan to step back into the ring. I'm not so certain about that. Part of my gut instinct says that there's something going on with Daniel Bryan. I mean, he did say this episode that he wants to speak to Shane McMahon on Monday, or rather on Tuesday, after the big pay-per-view to talk about the way they are not on the same page. You know, I can't help but wonder, we never actually got to see Daniel Bryan get chokeslammed by Kane. Is it possible that the former tag team champions have something up their sleeve? Dun, dun, dun. Good question, I think. Now, I'm really saddened in a way, a strange way, that Jinder Mahal is not represented on this anywhere. I get it. They want to put John Cena into the main event, but it would have been kind of cool if Jinder was in that match because he is the former WWE champion. It would only serve to make sense that the guy is involved somewhere. Meanwhile, where are Owens and Zayn on this lineup? Some of the things don't make sense, but overall, the card weighs up to be better than the sum of individual parts. It's going to be a very, very good pay-per-view. My opinion only, but I am personally looking forward to seeing it on Sunday. Before I give you the arm drag takedown of what happened this week on Impact Wrestling, I have two different notes of interest that broke this week regarding WWE talent. First of all is the release of James Ellsworth. Well, they certainly sent him off in style. They built the guy up and they really crushed him right before they released him. That's something that we've always seen happen in WWE on a general basis. But with Ellsworth, the guy could brag. He holds these pinfall victories over WWE World Champion AJ Styles. Well, before he left, his last impression in the company was that he got his ass kicked by every woman on the SmackDown roster and taking a pinfall loss to Becky Lynch. So the guy is going into the world of independent wrestling with a career in WWE and name recognition, but he really took one to the chin, so to speak, on his way out the door. Best of luck in your future endeavors, James Ellsworth. Maybe I'll be reaching out to you to chit-chat about what your experience there was like. In other news, breaking news, as this is being recorded, David Otunga, WWE announcer and former superstar David Otunga, and Oscar-winning actress Jennifer Hudson have split. And Jennifer has requested a temporary restraining order against David Otunga. Now, I want to say that I have met and interviewed Jennifer Hudson in the past. She is incredibly nice, but one of the things that is very, very interesting in what People Magazine is reporting about this split is that Jennifer Hudson has said, or her rep has said, that they are requesting this restraining order, quote, in the best interest of their son. Well, get this. David Otunga's attorney, and by the way, remember, David Otunga himself is an attorney and a Harvard graduate, so the guy is smart cookie. But he pulls no fucking punches in his response. I'm going to read this verbatim as best I can. David Otunga has been trying to negotiate the terms of an amicable parenting agreement with Ms. Hudson for several weeks now. However, when it became apparent to Ms. Hudson that Mr. Otunga would be the parent granted residential care of the child as a result of Mr. Otunga being the child's primary caregiver while Ms. Hudson pursues her career all over the world, Ms. Hudson decided to file a meritless petition for order of protection, meaning a restraining order, in an effort to gain an unfair advantage in the custody dispute. As a result of Mr. Otunga's career in the WWE, meaning that he's a wrestler and a big guy, right? Ms. Hudson felt that she could give an award-winning performance in court to portray herself as the victim. Mr. Otunga has never abused or harassed Ms. Hudson or their son, and it is unfortunate, especially in today's climate, i.e. all of the accusations of sexual harassment and other violence geared towards women. It's unfortunate, especially in today's climate, that she would feel the need to make these false allegations against him. Mr. Otunga looks forward to his day in court and in being awarded the residential care of the party's only child. Woo! Honey, they're about to lay the smack down on that fucking divorce court. Things are going to get ugly. Jennifer is a very nice person. I don't know what the details of their split are. Of course, that's all speculation right now. It's never easy for people. How many times have we talked to wrestlers, even in the short period of time that we've had this podcast, or I've had this podcast, about how difficult it is to balance careers and entertainment, especially Jennifer Hudson being a superstar flying all over the world. David Otunga has stayed at home. He has mostly been a stay-at-home parent because Jennifer can't do that. But I don't want to speculate on this. And I don't think that claims of, I don't want to make accusations or even suggest that claims of any kind of violence or fear in a home are unfounded. But it'll take some proving to make that to be the case. David Otunga has seemed like such an incredibly nice guy from everything we've ever seen about him. Even going back to his terrible, terrible days on I Love New York. God, I'm sure he wants to forget that. Anyway, I definitely know of situations when it comes to custody of children, when that's discussed, sometimes that does sway my opinion. But I'm not saying it's not possible whatsoever. But whew, things are about to get real, real ugly for a Hollywood A-list couple. Good luck to both parties on that. I hope for the sake of that child, things are, in fact, resolved amicably. Now, let's take a look at what went on this week on Impact Wrestling. I'm just going to cut to the chase, you guys. It doesn't matter what else happened on Impact Wrestling. I am stoked because for weeks and weeks now here on this podcast and for months and months on my social media, I have blown up the internet about what a fan I am of Fala Ba. The guy was a superstar in Pro Wrestling Syndicate, which if you guys are unfamiliar, if listeners are unfamiliar with Pro Wrestling Syndicate, look up PWS online. A number of people who have seen success in Impact lately, from Eddie Kingston to Fala Ba and Mario Bacara, who unfortunately have not seen success, to others, they've done extremely well for themselves in PWS and Pro Wrestling Syndicate, and I enjoyed their work there. I have said that Fala Ba has a special it factor that many wrestlers do not have. He's comedic. He's hilarious. I mean, the guy is short and really, really chunky. But he uses that to his advantage. He knows how to work the ring. He puts on a great match. And this week, we got to see him face off against EC3 for the Grand Championship. Now, if you watched, you know that Fala Ba picked up a first-round victory in this three-round judged competition. EC3 came back in the second round to pick up a victory and then ultimately cheated to get a pinfall on Fala Ba. I do not think for one moment that we have seen the end of this. It was a fun match for everybody to watch. It allowed Fala Ba to show why I believe that he has star quality. I hope this is only the beginning of big, big things for Fala Ba. Okay, now that that's out of the way, let's just do the general recap. Of course, we get to see Gail Kim retire while holding the Women's Knockouts Championship. The Knockouts title started with her 10 years ago, and now after Bound for Glory, where she picked up the victory in the three-way dance against Ali and Sienna, Gail Kim goes out on top. It's only fitting of a champion of her caliber, a performer of her caliber. I personally wish Gail nothing but tremendous success. Gail blessed this podcast by being my first ever interview, my first ever celebrity. If you haven't listened to it, go back to episode 1 and listen. She also gives us great insight into what's ahead for her. But I know other big things are coming in the Knockouts division. They've got some new names and faces showing up and some older faces more familiar faces that'll probably get a prominent role as things move forward. We'll find out how they crown a new women's champion, a new Knockouts champion in the coming weeks. The show started off, by the way, with a six-man X Division match. Taiji Ishimori, Caleb Konley, Trevor Lee versus Sanjay Dutt, Garza Jr., and Desmond Xavier. Desmond Xavier has been getting a huge push of late, and until recently, going into Bound for Glory, was positioned probably as Trevor Lee's top opponent for the title. It seemed in this match, though, that Ishimori was being positioned more as the next challenger for Trevor Lee. Who knows? I'm sure that they want to utilize Ishimori and their talent in exchange from Pro Wrestling Noah, but this is a little concerning because one of the things I've been saying about Impact that needs to be improved upon and worked upon is consistency. So if you're doing a big storyline push into your pay-per-view, at least continue it a little bit after the pay-per-view. It shouldn't be a hard stop for different storylines. Yes, definitely Xavier does pick up the win here. So maybe maybe he's still in the running. We're not sure. Notably, though, Garza Jr.'s big possible main event or main event level push that where he was being considered a top contender for Eli Drake's title has clearly come to a screeching halt after Bound for Glory because here he is in the opening match once again in the X Division. Good luck with that, Garza. I don't see you going back into the main event anytime soon. Sorry about it, buddy. Another note on the lack of consistency, or back to that note, we had a six-man match between OVE and LAX. It's OVE with the newly signed Sami Callihan taking on LAX in a six-man match. Now, going into Bound for Glory, OVE was supposed to be the babyfaces. Yet, in this match, the announcers and everything about it positioned LAX as the faces. It's a little confusing. I don't know what happened. I'm not sure where there was this switch. I don't know where it took a turn. Regardless, they need to define that for us because, you know, I'm not going to be cheering for OVE regardless. If they're supposed to be the faces, then the fans are supposed to cheer OVE. I don't know. Maybe the Canadian fans were confused. Maybe they seemed to be cheering LAX even though they were trying to get OVE over. I don't know. It's confusing. Regardless of this, LAX does pick up the victory here. Sami Callihan is a great performer. Don't even remotely get me wrong, but I don't like OVE, and so lumping him in with them doesn't do much for me at all. LAX as a face, if that's the route they're going, that could be very interesting, but I think that it might be one of those scenarios where they were forced to turn them face or felt they were forced to turn them face because people were responding so positively to some of the hilarious shit that Konnan says. I mean, when he called OVE the ovaries, I gagged, girl. I was gagging. Moose is out next to confront Dan Lambert, who's running down Impact Wrestling, saying that Impact promised that if America's Top Team won at Bound for Glory, which they did, that they would grant Bobby Lashley's release. Well, Lashley, at this point, doesn't seem to be getting his release. And then Moose confronts the scenario, saying, "How dare you, Dan Lambert, run down professional wrestling? It took six of you, or all of you guys, to beat me, and now you want this?" Well, needless to say, he tries to attack Dan Lambert, only to have America's Top Team jump him. Out comes James Storm to make the save. As it turns out, while Storm is going after Dan Lambert, some random dude tries to make the save. Storm cracks him in the head with a beer bottle, totally knocks him out, and then stands over top of him, basically, to cut a promo. Storm goes on to put over his accomplishments in the company, which he joined in 2002. It's been nearly 20 years, he says. He's done all of these things. He name checks Beer Money and America's Most Wanted, which, of course, were two of the highlights of his career. No matter what James Storm does in his career, no matter how good things get, he will never be able to walk away from his history, his extensive history with Bobby Roode. That's not a bad thing, because that some of that was classic, whether it was Beer Money or their feud for the Impact Wrestling World Championship. It was all good stuff. Because I've read reports on the internet, I know exactly where this is going. I don't want to ruin it for all of you guys who may not want the spoilers, but it's going to be the end of an era, we'll say that. Afterwards, back in the dressing room, KM approaches Dan Lambert, America's Top Team, asking for entry into the group. Bobby Lashley says that he'll, if that's even remotely possible, the guy's going to have to, you know, prove himself. I guess that ultimately Impact doesn't have a lot going on for KM, so they figure, oh, a big dumb guy with a bunch of other big dumb guys, this will be a great combo. We'll see how KM pans out as America's top team's lackey. We also see a backstage segment where Joseph Park sits down at a table of Impact stars and announces that he recognizes, finally, that he is Abyss. And that Abyss, this internal demon, has made him do all these terrible things, and especially what he did to Grotto recently. And ultimately, he gives Grotto his paperwork, and the guy's just ecstatic, as one might imagine, only to discover that his paperwork is only good for working in the United States and not in Canada. So he gets dragged off by a Mountie. Ugh. This just goes from bad to worse with this one, you guys. The main event is Impact Global Champion Eli Drake with his buddy Chris Adonis taking on the Canadian Destroyer, Petey Williams. It's a great match, back and forth. Good job by Petey Williams. Can I be honest about Petey Williams, listeners? Petey Williams is somebody who has had an iconic and historic career in Impact Wrestling. The unfortunate matter is, if you are not a longtime fan of Impact, Petey Williams is just another guy who popped up on your television screens a few weeks ago and has gone on to a hit or miss series of matches against top Impact Wrestling stars. He's not undefeated. He's not considered a huge threat for the championship, yet he's got himself a match now against Eli Drake, and it goes back and forth with ultimately Drake picking up the victory. But the only reason that Petey Williams is getting this kind of match and this level of exposure right now is because Impact is recorded in Canada at the moment for this series of television tapings. So again, let's review continuity. Continuity means that you bring in a character or take a character and build that character slowly over a period of time into being a credible threat to your champion. Petey Williams returned a few weeks ago. He lost, if I'm not mistaken already, to your X Division champion. He's not on a hot streak. He should not, regardless of where he is from, be positioned as a top contender for your world championship. I hope, my fingers are crossed. I'm going to say a little prayer. I'm hoping that, as is mentioned later in this episode, when I speak to Austin Aries, that Impact can, quote, right the ship, get things back on track. I want it to be a success. There are people that they could have available to them on an ongoing and consistent basis, performers who are talented, who are likable, who are charismatic and interesting and very unique. They need to sign these guys. They need to build them in the long run. They need to look at an end game, not the short-term goals and gains. They need to look at the end game and give each character a one-year initial build and or commitment. That doesn't mean that they need to, like, push them for a year, but a consistent year-long build, if they put these guys in a long-term contract, will establish so many people as stars that they can then utilize in their future. Impact, I implore you, please, please consider it. All right, you guys, that is the arm drag takedown of this week's Impact Wrestling. We are pushing an hour in. I've recapped 3 different televised wrestling shows, giving you some gossip. By the way, when I talk about where I get my online information, I almost exclusively go to WrestleZone.com. WrestleZone doesn't pay me. I'm not affiliated with WrestleZone. They do happen to be my favorite online wrestling internet site, my favorite of all the news boards. I visit several of the news boards, but WrestleZone is bookmarked. It's my go-to, and I want to shout out to WrestleZone again for actually respectfully covering a number of my interviews done here on this podcast and previously for the Huffington Post. As I mentioned in the upcoming interview with Austin Aries, countless times I've had various professional wrestling websites take my printed articles, strip out all of the quotes that I have sat down and transcribed, and thrown them up as their own article. Well, that would be fine. I would love for every single one of our interviews that I do on this podcast to be covered by the news boards. as a fan of professional wrestling, knowing that my work is being read by other fans of professional wrestling around the world is such a huge compliment. It's a huge compliment. It's an ego stroke because of the fact that this is something that since I was a young child, I've dreamed of doing on a professional level. Well, part of being a professional is means that you are being recognized for your work. So simply stripping away my name as a journalist, which I write under the pen name Pollo Del Mar, I write as a drag personality from a perspective of who I am as an individual, and I write actual, well-written, in fact, award-winning pieces of work. I don't do question and answers. I write what's called expository writing. I sit down and I tell a story, and I weave through that quotes from professional wrestlers or other celebrities, because I cover other celebrities as well. And so when a website, whether that is wrestling oriented or pop culture oriented, takes the interviews that I do and uses exclusively the quotes that I have taken my personal time to transcribe and include in an article, it's both lazy and disrespectful. It's lazy because if they wanted to cover the interview, coming up in just a minute, you guys, I've got a 70-minute interview with Austin Aries. Austin and I talk for 70 minutes. If you think that I'm going to be able to write an article, any one article that covers 70 minutes of conversation, you're out of your mind. That means if you are a news site, if you are a professional wrestling news site and you want exclusive content for your site, don't wait to strip out the quotes from my article. Sit down and tell somebody to listen to at least 15, 20 minutes of the fucking interview on their own. They don't have to listen to the whole 70 minutes. You could get probably 10 good quotes that is going to drive people to your website just by listening to 15 minutes of this upcoming interview. But they don't do that. A lot of the sites will just pull my information from my articles and use it as their own. The reason I'm giving a specific shout out to WrestleZone.com is because of the fact that they have never done that. Whether it was my work for the Huffington Post when I covered these interviews not in an auditory format, meaning not included in a podcast, they would, yes, use quotes from the article, but A, they always link to the original material, which is only respectful, and they actually acknowledge me as a wrestling journalist. I get it. I'm a drag queen. I'm a member of the LGBTQ community. People don't necessarily want to acknowledge who I am and what I do outside of my passion and love for professional wrestling, but that is who I am. I'm not going to try to hide it from you, the listeners. I'm not going to try to hide it from them, the readers. I'm not going to try to hide it from the public. It's not something I hide. It's who I am. It's what I do. And professional wrestling is what I have a passion and love for. So, of course, I want to cover it as a journalist. I write about it. I have this podcast. I tweet about it. I work in the professional wrestling industry when allowed the opportunity on a local level. But I really greatly appreciate WrestleZone for acknowledging and supporting me as a person. Other websites may do the same, may cover us, but WrestleZone, you got my heart. Thank you for that, and I'll be back in a moment with Austin Aries. Follow Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar on social media. Like Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar on Facebook. And follow us on Twitter, ADT with PDM. It's that simple, ADT with PDM on Facebook and Twitter. Look us up, like us, follow us. It's Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar, your first lady of professional wrestling. We're back with more Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. I am your host, Pollo Del Mar. Thank you, first and foremost, for indulging my little rant there. That's what I'm going to call my squared circle jerks when I each week tell you somebody who's really rubbed me wrong in the industry. And this week, it's shitty news boards that don't cite their source materials properly. All right, our next guest is going to be someone who rarely needs an introduction. He's a former two-time Ring of Honor champion, Impact Wrestling champion, and recently released WWE superstar. He can also count amongst his accomplishments author now that his new book, Food Fight, My Plant-Driven Journey from the Bingo Halls to the Big Time, is available for purchase now through his website, AustinAriesBook.com. Please welcome to Arm Drag Takedown, superstar, international icon, Mr. Austin Aries. Hi, Austin.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. I really appreciate you taking time to talk in a moment of, like, disclosure. You are my favorite Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, like, ever. So this is a really cool opportunity.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we, like, kind of dive into questions about the book and about wrestling, I want to say I was doing some reading, and in a USA Today article, you expressed, like, a pretty low opinion for journalists, so I'm a little nervous. You said that we kind of focus on clickbait, and so I was wondering if you've been misquoted and misrepresented in articles before.
Well, you know, it happens sometimes. It's happened a couple times. I've done, you know, it's not usually the guy that's interviewing me, but then when he sends it to the editor or whatever, or their boss, they're going to pick the one quote out of the whole thing that they think is going to get attention, and sometimes it's completely not relevant to what the whole topic of conversation was. So I've had it a few times where I've done some interviews and had a good rapport with the guy interviewing me, and then when I go to see what the headline is, you know, they pick the one sentence out that really had nothing to do with what we were talking about because they're going to figure that's going to generate clicks. And, you know, I've even had this, you know, this is like for Sports Illustrated, I even had the reporter go back and kind of plead the case, and his editor just overruled him and said, nope, he's going to get more clicks. So that's just, you know, but listen, dude, that's society nowadays, man. That's everything on your television. It's all to garner a reaction from people and get them to tune in and to pay attention. And, you know, so sometimes that shit happens. And, you know, there was a point where I was trying not to, you know, obviously when I had been released or whatever with WWE, I was trying not to really talk about it while I was still under my 90 days. I felt like I had an obligation to protect their business. I didn't really want to disclose or talk about any of that. So I was really careful, you know, with how I, you know, the questions I didn't answer, but then it seemed like, you know, that seemed to be what they wanted to try to drum the attention up to try to get the clicks. So, man, that's just kind of the way it is. I understand how it is, but yeah, you know, that's, you know, I like transparency. If you read my book at all, it's about transparency and not trying to mislead people or misinform them.
Yeah, well, I can understand because I've had situations. I've never actually had a celebrity, whether that was a musician or a professional wrestler, be unhappy with the article that I'd written. What I've had experienced is that, especially with professional wrestling, I'll write an article and then all of the wrestling sites will pick it up and they will use bastardized versions of what I actually said. And
yeah, same deal, man. They'll skim through a 20-minute interview and they'll pick the one thing and go, you know, Austin Aries reveals, you know, backstage politics. Or, I mean, I'm saying, like, they'll pick the one thing. It's like, all right, man, like, hey, like, that's like a full, accurate representation of what was said. And it wasn't even, like, really the bulk of what we were talking about. But that's exactly what they do. And I would put up a picture of me that had Enzo More in the background that was taken over in Rome at the Coliseum, and I put it up during the pay-per-view that I was having to be watching the pay-per-view, and I put the picture up when he came out for the match, and I just put the quote, like, what do we have over here? And literally the sites were reporting I was backstage at the Target Center for the pay-per-view, and I was like, and literally I posted a picture not 6 hours before that with no hair because I've shaved my head, and in this picture I had a full head of hair. And, you know, there's no way the Target Center looks like the Roman Coliseum, but it's just a complete lack of journalism. And that literally would take 2 seconds to just do any type of investigative work and fact check to see that, okay, well, obviously that's an old picture. But they don't give a shit about that, man. They just want to put out whatever's going to grab attention. And I called a bunch of them out on it because it's like, if you're that stupid, you know, I didn't think I had to preface that, you know, this is not, it's backstage. That was the last thing I thought anyone would take a run with. But that's just journalism nowadays, man, and people will take misinformation and regurgitate it and copy and paste without doing any of their own research. You know, I had the guy from the Gerwith Report, Steve Gerwith or whatever, he emailed me, like, oh, I'm sorry, man, like, you know, that's why I put possibly. I was like, dude, I know exactly what you were doing, like, and now you're insulting my intelligence. But, dude, it would have taken you 15 seconds to look at my Twitter feed and go, oh, obviously, he doesn't have hair. It's like I grew hair in 6 hours. But there's just, you know, that's the way it is, man. There's just a lack of accountability. So, you know what, I don't think you have anything to be concerned about, but that's kind of been my experience, and I just kind of half expect it half the time. But you know what, I talked to my publicist, Mark, or whatever, I mentioned I was doing this, and he said he's done stuff with you before, so he just did something with Kenny King or whatever, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all good, I'm not overly concerned with it.
The unfortunate thing is it kind of goes both ways, too, because I've had, you know, not only is the celebrity or the individual being misquoted, but I've had people who claim to be journalists because they have a blog somewhere and they have literally taken my entire article, basically changed a few words. And I was
sure.
Like, I'm like, this just sucks. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
enough of that bullshit because it's just the world we live in.
The cream rises to the top and the people doing that shit will always be at the level they're at. You know what I'm saying? And so it's just part of the culture nowadays.
Right. Absolutely.
Everyone has a voice, which is a good thing, but everyone has a voice, which can be a bad thing, you know?
Well, and in their case, I mean, it's obvious in my situation, they will only rise as far up as my own writing will take them. So if they don't have somebody to copy it from, then they don't have somebody to copy it from. Now, of course, I wanted to talk to you about Food Fight, your book. And I was, one of the things that you discuss is obviously all about the vegan perspective on health and fitness. And in it, you say that people give food like a really low priority in their lives, which makes it makes bad decision-making much easier if they don't prioritize it. And first of all, what shifted your perspective regarding it, and how do you maintain it when you're on the road so much?
I mean, listen, first of all, you know, you got to think about back to my schooling. You know, what do you take health class, like one semester of 1 year?
Right.
You know, we're not, again, I say in my book, like, they spent more time teaching about pi, 3.149, whatever the hell the number is, than they ever did about teaching about apple pie and what goes into it and if it's good for me. And I never used that first pie another day in my life, but you know, apple pie is something that's, you know, around me all the time. So there is a lack of education. I think it's part of it's part of the culture, because again, this is my personal opinion, but we have this corporate food system that, again, it's all about making money. We have a healthcare system that's all about making money. And healthy people don't help support those things. So we have a corporate food system that keeps people sick, sends them to our healthcare system, and our healthcare providers, they're not educated in food either. They spend about 2.5 weeks out of 4 years of medical school, if that, learning about nutrition. Why? Because that doesn't help their bottom. That doesn't help their business plan, right? If they tell you by eliminating certain foods from your diet and eating other foods in place of it, if they tell you that if you do that, you can actually cure yourself and not need their pills and everything that they're trying to keep you on to keep you as a customer, now that doesn't really help their bottom line. You got to think, like, you know, bypass surgery is it's a billion-dollar industry. And that's directly related to meat products, because you're talking about cholesterol. You know, so we're not educated about it, man. We're trying to find the cure for cancer. We're trying to find the cure for all these different diseases, you know, diabetes. We're trying to find the cure for Alzheimer's, ADD, depression. And we're talking about everything except for food? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's sort of the building block of everything we are. It's a choice that we make multiple times a day, every day. Why do we not think that's the most important choice we make? So when I say that people, for most people, you know, their criteria for food is, A, does it taste good? Do I like it? How cheap is it?
Yeah.
How quickly can I get it?
Yeah.
And that's really it. And yet, well, when it comes to their cell phone, they're not going, well, what's the cheapest, easiest, quickest cell phone I get? They'll wait in line for hours for the new iPhone and spend $500 to $800 on this thing. But when it comes to food, it's, well, it's really expensive. Really? It depends where your priorities are. And more people will spend more of their priorities and their money and their time and their effort picking out a sweatshirt to put over their unhealthy body than the stuff they put in their body to actually make it healthy on the inside, right? So, listen, that's our culture, man, and that is how it is. And that's, I don't know what my book's about. It's not about trying to make anybody vegan. It's about raising these questions and saying, let's take a second look at our priorities, why this isn't being prioritized in our culture, and then if that's really the best way to go. Because, hey, dude, when you look around this country, we're not a healthy country. We're a sick nation. And that pumps a lot of money into certain industries.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always had a strong belief that, I don't think it's across the board, but I definitely think that there are health issues that people just, you know, there's an industry that does not want a cure for anything because they're making billions of dollars by giving you this pill or that medication, or it's big business.
It is. There's money in dead people, and there's money in sick people, but there's not money in healthy people. And again, we don't have a healthcare system that's trying to cure you or prevent disease. We have one that wants to treat disease. Because if we treat you, we have a customer for life. If we cure you, we lost a customer.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, and that's kind of part of the problem, because again, hey man, capitalism is a great idea, but when we don't put some boundaries on that, and we don't make something sacred, and I think, you know, for me, you know, our health, when it comes to our healthcare system, our education system, and really I think our news, if you want to call yourself the news, those are the things that should be sacred and that we should take the profit out of and say this is just about providing the best for our people, because if we want to call ourselves number one and world leaders, then we need to start leading in those areas too.
Now, you advocate for people when they're looking to shift their relationship with food to possibly do it, for example, by skipping meat during a single meal or going meatless on Mondays. Those are two things that you've advocated for. But you said that for yourself, the shift in perspective was you described it as an aha moment. And I was wondering if you could tell me what that was and how that played out.
You want me to give the whole book away? No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't. The aha moment was after all these years of these little seeds that have been planted. And that's what I kind of chronicle in the book, where all these little moments in my life, even going back to being 7 or 8 years old, where things didn't sit right with me, where I was making the connecting some dots. You know, my head was pulled out of the sand and things didn't sit right. And this information and these things I was learning as I got older. But the aha moment was literally, you know, very early in my wrestling career. You know, I had to get my body in shape and I knew I had to, you know, you need meat for protein and, you know, chicken's the way to go. So, you know, being poor at the time, I invested all the money I had really to start training. I was living on my buddy's couch, giving plasma a couple of days a week to make some extra money. You know, I bought the biggest, cheapest bag of frozen chicken breasts I could find because, you know, I need meat for protein. It was during this where I was cooking up, you know, those dozen or so chicken breasts. In that moment, that was my aha moment where I just said, man, this shit's really gross. Like, this is really grossing me out, and I don't think I want to do this anymore. So that was really it. You know, the next day, I kicked the meat, and I went and bought, you know, some meatless products. And again, going back to then, I wasn't eating healthy. The choices I made then to kind of wean myself off the meat, as I look back at it now, aren't things that I would buy. You know, I was buying Morningstar Farms, which is a Kellogg's product, so you're talking about another big corporate entity. And if you really read the ingredients list of everything in there, you know, I don't know how much better for me it was, but it was the tool and the thing that allowed me to get off meat and kind of replace the things I had been eating with similar kind of faux products that kept me in my comfort zone. So those are good tools, man. You know, they have, you know, you can, and there's nothing now, especially nowadays, because it has become a big industry and there's a lot of money being pumped into it and it's growing. There's literally nothing that I used to eat as a carnivore that I can't eat now or replicate as a plant-based diet, whether it's bacon, burgers, mac and cheese, pizza. If you name it, I've had a plant-based version of it, and it's been delicious, and it's been better for me.
Are you one of those vegans that freaks out if somebody even cooks something in a pan that a meat has been in before?
That's not freaking out. Why would I want to do that? Do you like to eat skunk?
Of course not.
Okay, well, if I had some skunk cooked in the pan and then I said to throw some chicken in there, would you have any problem with that?
No, that's not what I'm asking at all.
Oh, okay, what are you saying?
Because, so, you have to remember, I'm from San Francisco. Everybody's touchy as fuck about everything around here. So, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had this one roommate one time who was vegan, and we had skillets, and I'd be like, well, I'll wash the skillet and put it back. She's like, no, it's had meat in it before. I'm like, it's metal. It also had whatever in it before.
So listen, in my own home, meat's not cooked in here. Meat's not kept in here. All my utensils, all my plates, everything hasn't had meat on it.
Of course.
And I prefer it that way. Now, if I go to someone else's house, you know, listen, I'm not going to freak out at that level. I'm not completely inattentive to that point. Again, even if there's some honey in something, you know, I may make the choice of going, well, you know what, I'm not going to freak out about it today. But... Will I go cook a veggie burger on a grill that just had some meat grilled on it? No. And I'll put it in some tinfoil. And again, the whole thing about vegan, and nobody can really, and that's why I don't like the term vegan. I like to use a plant-based diet, and I can get into that later. But it's literally impossible to lead a vegan lifestyle because, dude, there's animal products in literally everything. So you do the best you can. You be mindful and make the best decisions you can. And, yeah, man, if I go to eat out at a restaurant, I know there's cross-contamination. I'm not naive enough to think that there isn't. So, again, I do the best I can, and when I have the control over it, yeah, I like to keep my things separate. Before I went vegan and I was vegetarian, I'd have people say, well, why don't you just pick the pepperoni off? And I'm like, well, you know, like, the, you know, the secretions of the cow don't make me feel any better, and the flavor of it and things of that sort, which was hard for some people to understand. But, yeah, man, I do the best I can, and I think that's all anybody can do.
Yeah, no, I 100% absolutely understand the idea of, like, it's not exactly the same in any capacity to pick off a pepperoni or
Yeah, like deep frying stuff, right? Like, you know, places where you want to get some fries or something, but they're deep frying the same thing that they do their fish sticks or their chicken sticks.
Yeah, I hate
it. I'm not with it. You know, I can taste it. It doesn't taste good. It's not appetizing to me. And I think, right at the base level, one of the overriding decisions for me was when I thought about what it was, it just doesn't appetize me. Like, eating other animals doesn't appetize me when you really put the connection to it. And most people don't, and they dress it up to where they don't really, you know, we don't call it a cow burger for a reason.
Right.
We don't call it, you know, lips and asshole scrap. You know, we put these fancy names on them so that we don't think about what it is. Because I think when, you know, people make the correlation between the cute, cuddly pig that they're petting and then their bacon, for some people, they go, wait a second. That kind of doesn't sit right with me.
In terms of it being cross-contaminated, my mom will legitimately send any plate back that's ever had a pickle pretty much on it. She's like, nope, I can feel it, I can taste it, I can smell it. Nope. So I get it. And that's not even...
Absolutely.
That's not even a moral issue. That's just she hates it.
Exactly, yeah, and sometimes it's a mental thing as much as anything else, you know.
So a huge part of writing Food Fight was for you to educate readers on a lot of elements, whether it was decision-making around food or the kind of nutrition that they're taking into their body or the vegan lifestyle that you personally live. But in terms of being educated in the process, what did you learn throughout writing the book?
I'll be honest, I don't know that I learned a lot writing the book because, to be quite honest, this was, you know, the story that I've been kind of, for 10 years, you know, 10 to 15 years now, as people encounter me, they tend to ask the same questions, right? And so in that, I've kind of told the same story 100 times. So when it came to writing this book, I was just kind of putting it on paper. You know, so it was something that I've already kind of been talking about for a while, whether it's, you know, family, friends, fans. So I did learn, you know, Mike Tully was a huge help in helping me, you know, turn my story into an actual book because, you know, I'm not an author by trade. So, you know, he was able to take these stories and these ideas and really craft them in a way that helped me flesh it out, you know. So really, I think the thing I learned more than anything else is just the process of writing the book, and there's different ways you can do it. For me, like, this was a great vehicle and opportunity to kind of tell my story for someone who's not really an author by trade, you know. And so, again, Mike, you know, I give credit to Mike Tully for helping me do that.
Actually, that is kind of along the lines of what I was asking, because I didn't expect that you uncover, I mean, you're not doing this from a investigative reporter type of perspective. This is your own story, but
right.
I really look at everything. I mean, let's just go to like the sort of the subtitle of the book itself. It's your journey from the bingo halls to the big time. And so it's that journey of writing the book that's so educational, just like, you know, you probably have a completely different perspective on things now that you've done that.
Yeah, and you know, I'll be quite honest, like, you know, when you think of writing a book, if you're actually someone's going to sit down and put a pen to paper, that can be a daunting task and be very timely. You know, the process of how we did it, which is basically sitting there and having, I don't know, about a dozen conversations that we recorded, and then really from there, taking that information and starting to create the story, I think was a lot easier than I thought when it comes to, like, oh, you want to write a book? I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, with my typing skills, I'd probably be on page 6 right now. You know, that's not my forte. So this really, you know, made it so much easier where I could really just talk and tell my story and with passion and do it, and then come back after that was being recorded. And we'd done that a dozen times. You go, okay, now how do we make this into a story? How do we put this on paper and make it enjoyable for the reader and informative and something of value?
Yeah, I can understand how overwhelming that thought would be for somebody who is not a writer by trade, because I am a writer by trade, and I've many times thought of doing that. And my mom's like, why don't you write a book?
It might take you 30 minutes to put a tweet out sometimes, and that's what, you know, a couple hundred characters at this point. You know, like.
Right. I think that the only way to really do it is probably just little bit by little bit. You know, you tell a little bit of the story, and then you tell the next piece and the next piece, so... Fortunately, you know the story pretty intimately because it's yours.
Exactly, yeah, and I've regurgitated enough times to people that I didn't have to sit there and think about it. It really just, all right, I'll tell it one more time, but this time we'll document it, and then we'll create this, you know, the story out of it.
You, in the books, mentioned that it took you like over a decade to actually ultimately remove dairy products and things like that from your diet. As a cheesehead from Wisconsin, that's like kind of taboo and everything against everything you grew up believing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was one thing I clinged to, and you know, I, again, we're good at making excuses or finding reasons for things if we don't want to do them. You know, so for me, I would kind of tell myself, well, you know, the cow's not really dying. You know, it's not really hurting the cow. It's, you know, it's not being killed. And that was how I kind of wrapped my head around it. And then it's still with this premise of, well, you know, I do need some kind of, you know, animal proteins if I'm going to build muscle. So, you know, we're really good at telling ourselves what we need to hear if we don't want to make certain choices. But, you know, after I watched the Forks Over Knives, which chronicled the China study, which was a, you know, 20-year study they did on the effects of, you know, milk protein and cancer, you know, for me, the evidence was compelling enough to say, you know what, I've come this far, and really the only thing I'm clinging to is, like, string cheese and whey protein powder, because I was never a big milk drinker. Milk always grossed me out, even as a kid, so that was probably a sign that maybe this is somewhere I was going to go eventually in life. It wasn't a huge change. And once I found that there was really good plant-based protein powders, because, you know, I'm drinking protein shakes and things like that for the protein for muscles, it wasn't that hard. That wasn't really that hard of a transition. And the eggs thing I've been going back and forth on for years, because when I thought about what eggs were, it really grossed me out. Then I got back to the protein thing. So I just was, you know what, like, I've come this far. I'm really just having to make this one last kind of change and just this one last kind of tweak. And it wasn't as difficult because of that. But that's why, again, I'd say I'm not trying to make anybody go vegan, because for me, it's a long journey, and that's an all or nothing proposition. And I don't want to set people up for failure. I want to be inclusive. I want to you know, bring more people in than I push away. And the term vegan, you know, has a stigma attached to it. It's not a label everybody wants to slap on themselves. So
Lord, it's an annoying label.
I encourage people to, it can be, you know, and listen, there's a lot of great organizations out there whose cause is very noble, but, you know, they undermine that with the message and how they go about it. And, you know, so be very careful with who I've partnered with over the years as far as that, because, again, listen, there's truth to all of it. There's truth to the atrocities that are being committed to animals, and it is disgusting in a lot of ways. There's truth to the, you know, what's happening to the planet, and how we're just, you know, we're using the resources and not using it efficiently, and that all being tied to this meat, you know, this meat industry. But again, I'm not trying to shock people. I don't want to push people away. I want to you know, invite them to just open their mind to implement more of a plant-based lifestyle. Because I believe enough in the effects of that if people are just open their mind to it, start doing their own research, start reading labels, start understanding what the shit is that's in their food, if they're going to take that on to whatever degree they're going to, and if they don't go as vegan as I am, that's cool. Because if everybody just went half as vegan as me, or half the people went a quarter vegan, or everyone did Meatless Mondays, it would really have a drastic effect over the environment and over our health and well-being. So I'm not trying to judge people on how vegan they become or they don't become. I'm just trying to, you know, challenge people to open their minds to more of a plant-based diet.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately when an individual has what is considered an extreme lifestyle decision, like in your case, it's it's being vegan. In my case, I'm many years sober, and so I don't drink or do drugs or whatever. Like, a big factor that allows people to receive the message a little bit more is when you're not, like, you know, I don't go around and be like, oh, really, a cocktail? You're drinking it.
Right.
Like, do what you're going to do. I'm going to do what I'm going to do and just live your damn life, you know? But you might be mindful of the fact that if it reaches a certain point, it can get really problematic.
And, you know, the one thing I've combated, you know, when people bring up the, you know, that's a really extreme lifestyle, I say this to them. You know, my diet is an extreme choice, where every time I sit down, every time I eat, I consume zero animal products. And then I usually pose the question to these people, so tell me the last time you sat down and your meal did not consist of meat, dairy, or eggs. And when I get back to you, it's a bunch of blank stares, because people can't remember a time that they had what they would consider a meal and it didn't have some form of meat, dairy, or eggs. So then I pose the question, well, why do you think that being indoctrinated in this other extreme dietary lifestyle is okay? Because when you look at statistics and you look around you, it would suggest that it's not, and it's not very good for us. So I'm not saying come all the way over to my extreme, because I'm not saying that that's right for everybody, but I do question why we're indoctrinated to think that we have to live in the other extreme, that every time we eat, if it doesn't have meat, dairy, or eggs, that's not a meal, that's a snack, you know? And so when I pose that question, I literally get a bunch of blank stares, because I know, hey, dude, for 22 years before I made these choices, every meal I had meat, dairy, or eggs in it every time. And so when you realize, before we're even really conscious enough or old enough to understand the choices that are being made for us, we've been kind of indoctrinated in this mindset that it has to have, you know, meat, dairy, or eggs to be considered a meal. And that's extreme as well. And we're seeing extreme results, whether it's an extreme sickness in this country. We're seeing extreme effects in our environment. And obviously, you know, if you really want to uncover all the atrocities that we're doing to the animals, it's pretty extreme and it's pretty disgusting.
One of the things that you've already mentioned that kind of made me stop and think is, like, I did not realize that honey is considered non-vegan, because I guess because it's made by a bee.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically bee puke, for lack of a better term.
But delicious bee puke. Right?
Yeah, it is. But you know what? Maple syrup's good. It comes from a tree. Agave syrup, it's all the same. So, I mean, again, there's alternatives out there. So, you know, if you want to be mindful of that, you can be. And again, it's not. It's one of those things that I don't necessarily freak out about. But if I have a choice, or if I'm not feeling it that day, I'll stay. You know, but if you know, something, if it, all it has in its honey, and I feel like, you know, it ain't going to kill me, I can wrap my head around it for the day. But yeah, I mean, it comes from an animal. It's an animal byproduct, and therefore it wouldn't technically be considered vegan.
Never occurred.
Same with some of your artificial colors and stuff. You know, some of your colors you don't realize are actually like little insects that they just crushed up and they use for their color. Oh, you know, there's all these things when you start peeling back layers and start really understanding what's in your food, you start going, oh, shit, I didn't realize that they're using animals for all sorts of things. You know, again, a lot of red wines aren't considered vegan. They use something called isinglass in there, which is fish bladder byproduct. They use that in the filtering process. Also, some of your dark beers like Guinness also use isinglass in there, which, again, fish bladder byproduct. They use that in the filtering process. So real picky vegans, you know, they'll go and they do make red wines that don't use that and that are considered vegan. But these are all things I've learned over the process that you never would think about. You know, you wouldn't think about potato chips would have whey in them, and not flavored potato chips, but just potato chips in general, or certain breads. They just put whey in there. Why? Because whey is a huge byproduct of our milk industry. You know, so they need to put it somewhere. So they've sold it to us as a weight gainer for, you know, protein powder, and they stick it in all a bunch of foods as a filler to up the protein content, and that's why you have this message now. Everyone thinks they need protein, protein, protein. You don't need that much protein. For an average person, you're talking about maybe 50 to 60 grams of protein a day. And we're consuming 2, 3, 4 times that. And that's, you know, listen, as a high-level athlete who breaks down my body and needs to repair it on a regular basis, yeah, I need to up my protein content than the normal Joe. But, you know, we've been told now that, you know, again, milk used to be for calcium, which is funny because milk actually depletes calcium from your bones. So, of course, you need to drink more milk because milk's depleting calcium from your bones. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But now that we've kind of debunked that and we realize there's all these other sources of calcium that they're actually not as destructive, they've now changed their campaign to milk for protein. You know, so that's why all this mantra that protein is this wonder is the one thing that won't make you fat, will make you lean muscle. And quite frankly, it's bullshit. And it's all because it's money and marketing.
One of the things that definitely is intriguing to me is, because as a professional wrestler, a huge part of that is muscle mass and fitness in regards to muscle gain, that you are able to sustain all of this on a completely plant-based diet.
You have to understand the chemistry of the body. Listen, your body, when it breaks down proteins, it breaks it down into amino acids. It then uses those amino acids to rebuild. But your body doesn't know the difference between a chicken protein or a plant source protein. It breaks it down into amino acids. It doesn't know the difference. It literally doesn't know the difference. So as long as you're consuming the right amounts of amino acids and proteins, and those can come from rice, hemp, legumes, you know, beans, lentils, you know, soybeans, spinach. I mean, everything has protein in it to different levels. As long as you're consuming enough of those for your body to rebuild the muscle, you're fine. And really, the formula isn't about how much protein you take in. It's about how many calories you take in. And the calories all work together. You know, fats work with carbs, work with proteins, and you need all of them. And so really, the idea of keeping on size and mass isn't about how much protein you take in. It's about making you're consuming more calories in than the calories out.
Right.
And if you do that consistently and you're working out and you're training and you're getting enough protein to rebuild the muscles, which again has been overblown by the bodybuilding industry because they're trying to sell you all these supplements, protein bars, protein powders. You know what I'm saying? So, but you don't really need to do it. Robert Cheek's a great example. He's been a vegan bodybuilder for years and he subscribed to the conventional wisdom of bodybuilder mentality of protein. And so he was eating a lot of these, you know, fake meat products and a lot of these protein shakes. And after we did some research, I want to say with T. Colin Campbell, and realized that, you know, he could get all, about 15% of his overall calories would come from protein, but he would eat a whole food plant-based diet. So he did this for a year. He eliminated all the extra supplements, all the extra bullshit, and he just focused on more calories in than calories out. But again, if you're 175 pounds, 180 pounds, they're telling you, well, you can get at least 180 grams of protein. Well, when you start going to 15% of your overall calories, that's going to break down to be about maybe 120. You know, it's not going to be as much, but he did this for a year. He put on 25 pounds of muscle.
Wow.
And he did it by not taking supplements. He lifted heavy. He lifted to put on size. He ate enough calories to make sure that he had enough calories in his system. But he kept his protein intake at 15% of his overall calories. So if you up your overall calories, you're going to up your protein in the process. But it's not just about protein intake. It's about the overall caloric intake, nutrient-dense food, not calorie-dense food.
So can we talk about wrestling?
We can talk a little bit about wrestling, sure.
Yeah, I mean,
I might not talk about it with as much passion, but I'll talk about it.
I think it's obvious that you're very passionate about this, but obviously you've been passionate about wrestling for many, many years, given the kind of career that you've had. And I know I've read, and I am remiss in saying that because we've already talked about how erroneous some of the reports might be, a variety of things regarding your decisions or the decisions for you to leave WWE and the kind of impact and career that you were able to have there. And what is your takeaway from the whole experience?
You know what? It was a great experience. It was, you know, I believe everything happens for a reason. And that ended up being a great vehicle for me in a number of areas. I'm grateful for my time there. If you listen to the Chris Jericho podcast, you got the truth about my departure there and what didn't happen. But you know what? It provided me a great opportunity. You know, it kind of checked off the last couple of things in my career that people would kind of use against me and say, well, you never been to the big time. You know, well, you never been to the big dance. Not that those things bothered me, because I'd reconciled some years back that that may not be in my cards as an active wrestler. And I was very content with the things I have done in the industry. I've been able to travel the world. I've met a lot of great people. I've been able to, you know, provide a great living for myself and do something I love to do for the last 17 years. A lot of people don't get to say that. But, you know, when the opportunity did present itself, I had to take it, you know, because it was the one thing I really hadn't done. And being there now, I see there's a difference in corporate structure. That's a corporation, and it runs like a corporation. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it gave me the glimpse to see how they do their business, the things they value there. And it provided me a platform now that's allowed me now, as I continue on with my journey, to say that I've done that, I've been there, I had the experience, I got to have my WrestleMania moments. You know, I got to come out in front of, and whatever it was, 50 or 60,000 people probably in the stadium at that time. And those are things I'll always remember and I'll always cherish. You know, it also opened the doors for me for commentary, which was something that I hadn't really ever thought about doing in the industry. And when the opportunity presented itself, I was more than happy to take it. And it turned out to be such a great experience that now hopefully, you know, puts me in a different light in some people's eyes that will open up those opportunities for me moving forward. But you know what? It's a very demanding schedule, and they own you, and they own your life. And for some people, that works. While I was there, I was more than happy to commit myself to it. But now that I'm on the other side, and I see what a great professional wrestling scene there is, and how vibrant it is, and how much opportunity there is all over the world, and the financial component that's attached to it, and then also now being able to have the freedom to go and promote my book and do some of these other festivals and speaking engagements and some of these other things I have in the works that will be coming out in 2018, I realized, you know, how much I do appreciate having a life and kind of calling my own shots, being my own boss. It's something I've always valued. I think that's why I wanted to get in professional wrestling. I didn't want to have a 9-to-5 job. And, you know, WWE is not a 9-to-5 job. That's like a, you know, that's like an 8 to 11:30 job. You know what I'm saying? It's a full-time job.
Two full-time jobs.
And again, it's very rewarding. What's that? It's like two full-time jobs.
Exactly.
You know, because you put the time in while you're there, but you have to put so much time in when you're not there just to be ready for when you are there. I mean, I was on the road 5.5 days a week for 4 months straight. And, you know, that can take a toll on somebody, not just physically, but also mentally. And also, you know, in their personal lives, you're trying to juggle a life outside of that, and it can be very difficult. I commend the people who have been able to be there for, you know, 5, 10 years and really live that lifestyle. And I enjoyed it while I was there, but I'm also really enjoying now, since I've left, to see all the opportunity that's in front of me and everything that I get to do now and really kind of dictate my own schedule, dictate my own direction, and that's something I do value quite a bit.
You talk about the experience in a pretty excited and passionate way, saying that it was like checking something off a bucket list for you, but the fan expectation for you might have been different, and I think that that's where you get a little bit of clash in terms of people's reaction or response to that experience. Because, and I can say from a personal perspective, like, I looked at it and I think to myself, okay, I'm a huge Austin Aries fan. I've enjoyed what he's done throughout his career in Ring of Honor and Impact Wrestling, TNA, and why are other people given opportunities that he could have easily... I mean, I would have died to see you go against The Miz. I think that would have been a great program. I think that the two of you would have been amazing.
Here's the thing, man. Like, when you get in that type of setting, there's a lot of factors that go into the decisions that are made. And there's only so much that, as the performer, that you really are in control of.
Absolutely.
Again, the difference between having your own business or going and working for a corporation. And there's a lot of layers and there's a lot of moving parts, and you're part of the system, and you have to get in where you fit in. And a lot of times you don't dictate where that is. I kind of alluded to it in another interview I did. I said, but it's like, you know, I can compare it to like a music band. But even think about this, if you have like your favorite painter, you know, your favorite illustrator, and you love all of his artwork, and then, he gets under some major umbrella, and they tell him, yeah, we love your stuff, but here you only get to paint with these four colors now. These other 12 colors, these other 200 colors are off limits. You know, and you go, oh, man, this guy used to paint such beautiful pictures, and now look at this. Well, yeah, because he's got certain parameters are being put on him, certain limitations are being put on him. These other guys get to use these colors. You don't get to use these anymore. And that's why what happens there. And, so people are expecting a certain thing out of me because, you know, they know what I do and what I bring to the table for, you know, the last 15-plus years. But when you get there, that might not be what's being asked of you. And so what you do there is you just try to do what's being asked of you, and you use the tools at your disposal, and you try to do the best you can with them. That was kind of the situation there. And again, I didn't come there in my prime per se, you know. And also, I don't maybe fit the physical mold of what they look at when they're trying to decide who are going to be their top guys. There's a lot of factors that go into that, and that's a lot of stuff that the fans, you know, I'm sure they're aware of, but maybe they're not aware of to the extent. So their disappointment is understandable, but I don't want to focus on that. I focus on the great opportunity I did have. I did the best I could with what was given to me, and I'm grateful for the opportunity I had and the time I spent there.
Yeah, absolutely. And as somebody who doesn't exclusively interview professional wrestlers, I hear along the lines of what you've described just now from specifically from musicians all the time. You know,
absolutely. And
their work, for example, will get them signed.
In the wrestling industry, very close like that.
Yeah, with a musician, whatever they do, you know, leading up to something can impress people. And then as soon as they get signed, they say, we love everything you were, but we're going to change everything about it. And you're going to do this now. And
right. And let's be honest, you know, listen, if you strip away the things that make me unique and you strip away whether it's part of my moveset, whether it's part of my character, now people are telling me how I would talk, what I would say. And, you know, when you start taking those things away from a guy like me, what you're left with is an undersized 39-year-old white guy. And there's nothing special about that in this industry. That's not the first choice for the guy that we're going to, you know, put on the headline. I'm not going to wow you at first glance from a physical standpoint as far as a professional wrestler goes. I kind of joke around when I do some of my speeches. I say I really confuse people because I'm giving these speeches at these, you know, veg fests. You know, I'm talking about plant-based diet. And I go, all right, I know what you're thinking. Like, I'm way too small to be a professional wrestler, but I'm way too jacked to be a vegan. So I'm confusing people. They don't know. Wait a second. And somehow I'm both of those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man. Like at the end of the day, if you start, I'm an artist, man. I've been very lucky through the course of my career to work with people who allowed me to go out there and be me. Because I realize that they let me do what I do best. That's going to be pretty good. And, of course, you know, you do it within the parameters that you're given. You do it within the structure. You take the ideas, you take the storylines, and you do what you can with them. But I've been very, very blessed to have people just say, hey, man, here's the outline. Now you go fill it in. You know, here's the bullet points. Here's what we need accomplished. Now go do it, because that's what you do. In that environment, you know, that's not always the case. But again, you can't really argue against them because they're the biggest entity in this industry. And so, honestly, the formula works for them.
Just so you don't become surprised later on, that quote that you just said regarding stripping away the things that make you unique is going to end up in our Huffington Post article, because that is one of the most interesting perspectives I've ever really had somebody place on professional wrestling, meaning that each wrestler has things that are uniquely their own, and when they're put together in a totality, that makes that character, person, individual unique and special. But if there's a decision-making process that pulls that away, then what's left may not be that interesting.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, and I think, again, I think that could be, when you're talking about art forms, when you're talking about artists, I think that's, again, music's the same way, right?
Absolutely.
And for a guy like me, again, I don't maybe have some of the tangible things that you'd look for, but I have some of the intangibles that you don't necessarily see at first glance.
Absolutely.
And again, I felt too, that I'm very comfortable in certain roles, and for there, especially at this point in my career, being an antagonist is something I feel much more comfortable with than being the protagonist. If you follow sports, Derek Jeter was a Hall of Fame shortstop, but he's probably a double-A catcher. And if you're going to insist on playing him behind the plate, you're going to get what you get.
You know, it's very interesting when I think about the perspective you just presented, because when we see people, for example, who leave an organization like WWE and then explode in popularity on the independent circuit, the first person that comes to mind, for example, is Cody Rhodes and this tremendous success he's had of late. It's because he was able to shed the confines of who they were creating him to be and be himself in a way that is charismatic, it is interesting, it is unique.
Of course.
Yeah, it's very interesting to put it in that light.
For some guys, who's a guy like Cody Rhodes, who was obviously born into this industry and have the utmost respect for him and his talent, he's one of those guys that once he was able to go out there and be himself and do what was coming from his heart, you see the results. And there's a lot of guys like that. And now there's actually a really thriving, fruitful scene where guys can go do that and make a very good living while they do it.
I have two questions relating to that. One, first of all, is there ever a possibility that we're going to see a Cody Rhodes versus Austin Aries match for the Ring of Honor title?
If you can hold on to that thing long enough to where I can get myself in there. He's obviously, that's a big target that around his waist, and one that I've carried a couple times in my career, so I know the pressure that's associated with it. And he's done a great job so far. I love the opportunity, whether it's for the Ring of Honor title or not, just to get in there with him. He's one of those guys that I haven't had a chance to get in there and tangle with. So, I love that opportunity no matter where it is. But if it's for the Ring of Honor championship, all the better. Just raise the stakes. It would make us raise our game.
I've had the opportunity recently to see him live, and the way that he interacts with the crowd outside of WWE is remarkably different than the way he did within the organization, within WWE. It's very good, very good, very good.
You mean does he actually look at the camera when he's cutting a promo and talking to people?
Well, he's
just... It's an amazing concept, I know, to actually, look at the camera when it's in front of you when you're being interviewed.
Well, what I got a great thrill out of, honestly, was that we all know that he's Dusty's son, but the way he plays his character now, he's playing the Ric Flair type of character, which mm-hmm. makes it even more interesting because he's Dusty's son, if that makes sense.
Sure. That's
the angle he played the whole thing. It was like he was wrestling Willie Mack, and Willie Mack got to play the Dusty character, and he got to play the Flair character, and it was just super fun to watch, super fun. Oh.
And the body types fit there, so I'm sure it was a great match. I'm a big fan of Willie Mack.
Yeah, they're both really talented, I have to say that for sure. So the other question
Absolutely.
I was going to ask is, now that you are back on the market and taking bookings throughout the independent circuit, you have been name-checked as a person who is an influencer in making other people reevaluate whether or not they want or need to be with WWE because of the kind of lucrative career that you are looking to have as an independently booked performer.
I guess that's the case. I guess, it's funny what a tweet can do. I put a tweet out there just saying that, the next 30 days, I'm going to crush any month I ever had with the WWE. It's not going to be close. I'm going to do it in 12 dates instead of the 20 I was usually wrestling. So, again, is that going to be there forever? And is that going to be there for everybody? Not necessarily. Do I owe a lot of that to the fact that I just, was wrestling with WWE? Absolutely. That's not lost on me. But as someone who has, plied his trade on the independent scene, so to speak, for most of his career, and as the top guy a lot of the time while I was doing it, I know what the financial landscape has been, and it's as healthy now as it's ever been. So, I think it's also part of society, man. You have more do-it-yourselfers and guys who want to take the bull by the horns and make their own way. And there's now a viable places to do that. And I think a lot of that has to do with, social media, the internet, all the tools that we have now to promote yourself. Again, when I broke in 2000, to get your name out there and to get booked places outside your little, you know, your bubble, so to speak, was a task. It was tedious. You know, it was word of mouth. It was handing VHS tapes, if people remember those. You know, handing those to people to hopefully hand the people so that maybe somewhere in some other state sees some value and he was willing to bring you in. Now literally a guy can put his matchup on his YouTube channel 15 minutes after he had it and start making a name for himself that way and self-promote and use all the social media tools, merchandise tools. It's a whole different ballgame, and it's leveled the playing field in some respects that, you know, you don't need to have a major television network deal to have your product being out there and be seen. That's providing a lot of companies the opportunity, if they're putting out quality product that people, you know, resonates with people, that it can be a viable place and people are going to come out and spend their money, because sports entertainment's great, but there's a huge market of pro wrestling fans who just want to see pro wrestlers pro wrestling.
I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, I love that. And I honestly think that in terms of what people would consider the independent wrestling scene, which probably goes so far as to extend to Ring of Honor and Impact Now and a variety of other places, certainly, you know, well, Japan is outside of our market and international, but those are, with Lucha Underground, all these places are incredible ways to see wrestlers that we wouldn't necessarily see on any scale in WWE, because as you mentioned, like size differentials and things of that nature that would not make them a viable contender elsewhere, they can really show what they can do in the ring and the talent that they have. And we still get to see it on our television.
When you're talking about entertainment, it's about connecting with your audience, you know, and more so now than ever, guys can really connect with the audience in their own way and really, you know, show the fans who they are, what they're about, and then people can kind of pick and choose who they gravitate to, who they want to support. You know, and that's a cool thing because, yeah, man, you can't look at somebody and say, oh, that guy can't be an artist. And there's, I don't know what the pre-qualifications are physically to be entertaining. I haven't found any yet because there's been entertaining people of all shapes and sizes, colors, ages. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're entertaining and people are entertained by you, and that's the name of the game, this is the entertainment business, if you can be entertaining, there aren't really any parameters on that, especially when you're talking about in the independent scene or doing it for yourself. So it's a great time for pro wrestling fans. It's a great time for pro wrestlers. And I'm happy to, you know, kind of throw my hat in there and add some value to the places that I go and decide to go do that.
You've accomplished so many things, and the WWE being the last promotion that you really haven't touched base with until more recently. When you are now available to go back into the world being your own boss, what is it that's motivating you? What do you want to accomplish? Are you goal-driven in that way?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess one place, I suppose, that now, if I look at the landscape, that I haven't really had the opportunity to go would be New Japan. And, you know, that's, I've been to Japan a few times for other companies, but never for New Japan. So, you know, I guess that's maybe one place now that I can look at to say, well, you know, I haven't really done that, and it might be great to experience that. But I think more so now than anything, I'm not trying to go out there and have a money grab where I'll just take any booking and any place against anybody just for a sole monetary gain. You know, like I'm looking to really, I want to support places that I think are doing things the right way. Places that care about the fans and more importantly care about the wrestlers that are going out there and really busting their ass. But luckily there's enough of those places now that are interested in my services to where I can really do that. And I want to build a relationship with these companies. I want to be there and, again, bring something of value. And then, you know, the other part is, like, listen, this plant-based lifestyle is a huge part of who I am. And if you look at wrestling fans across the board, I don't think anybody's going to argue that that might be an area, as far as their health and wellness, that could be something that they could step up and maybe it's important to them. So, well, I mean, I'd say no seriousness, man, because, listen, part of the reason I'm so passionate about this is because as I've gone around the country for the last decade, man, I'm shaking 8 to 10-year-old kids who are already on their way to type 2 diabetes and all these other ailments. And it's not because their parents are malicious. It's because they're misinformed.
I mean,
that really hits home to me. I had a fan of mine come up to me not that long ago at one of these speaking engagements I did. And he came over and said, hey, man, like, I've been a fan of you for a long time. I started watching Ring of Honor, watched you in Impact. And I remember, you know, they called you the Spectacular Vascular Vegetarian, and I heard you were vegan, so I decided to try it. And I've lost 220 pounds.
Whoa.
And my mother and my sister have each lost over 100 pounds each. They didn't stick with it, but initially they lost over 100 pounds each. And that's real impact. That's changing someone's life. That's completely changing the course of their life. You know, the entertainment aspect's cool, and I said I've been really blessed for 16 years to help people forget about their problems while they just come to be entertained. But now I really have a chance and an opportunity and a voice and a platform to help people start changing some of these problems and changing their life. And that's what I want to use wrestling for, man. It's cool to go out there and entertain people, but, you know, there's real things that you can really help people change the course of their life. You know, you're seeing, like, you know, again, DDP yoga is an example of, you know,
first thing I thought of when you said that. First thing.
Helping people change their life. So, you know, I'm still active and I can still do it. But I realize I do have a voice and people do look up to me. And if I can inspire people to change their opinions on things or try something and help people, you know, lose 220 pounds and completely change the course of their future, how could I not want to do that? You know, because listen, this is a silly little thing we do at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? If you really break it down, it's entertainment and it's fun and it's silly in its own way. But to be able to have that kind of real impact and help people make real changes, that's where I'm at in my career, man. I've had all the great matches. I've had the accolades. You know, I've had the WrestleMania moment now. I've literally done everything I wanted to do and more. Now what I want to do is I want to start giving back and helping people instead of just helping them forget.
Austin, you need to get that kid and do a video with him to promote your book.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Unfortunately, I don't know. You know, I'll have to find some before pictures, right? I'll have to find him and get in contact with him. I'm sure he follows me on some social media platforms, so
hell,
I'll reach back out if I put that out there. But you know, I've got some things in the works coming up in the new year where, you know, I'm going to be able to start, you know, working with people hand in hand, and for the people who are interested in learning about plant-based diet and set themselves up for success, to where I'm going to be able to go in there and do that with them. And I think that's going to be a real powerful thing. And I think there's a real healthy market for that as well.
Well, Austin, thank you for so much for spending so much time with me and talking. I really appreciate it. Like I said, your era in Impact was probably my favorite. Well, parts of it were my favorite.
I hear that a lot, man. I'll be honest. They dropped the ball there. And that's, this quote will probably make it, but they dropped the ball. They had a lot of buzz going on when I was on top there, and they decided to throw that away for much of the same that they had been doing for years. And I don't think they really recovered. There was a lot of good stuff going on at that point, and I think they sold themselves a little short. And hopefully they can right the ship now. And because, listen, the more healthy, viable places there are for people to watch wrestling and for wrestlers to go and make a living, the better we all are. So, you know, hopefully they can turn their ship around, and they've got some new people at the helm now, and hopefully that happens.
I didn't want to dive back in, but when you say that they dropped the ball, like, that is my almost consistent feeling with the company. I'm a big Impact fan. I follow it regularly. In fact, I enjoy it quite often more than I enjoy some of what's going on in WWE, but it feels like just when they've got somebody that's like right there that they're ready to make into this next star, like they decide they're going to discontinue that. And it blows my mind as a viewer. It blows my mind as a person who's followed wrestling for many years. And it's like, are you going to pull the trigger and make this person a star? Or are you going to think about it and then change your mind at the last minute and go back to what you're right. doing?
Yeah. And you know, the one term that I used quite a bit when I was there is I said they have a company of half-made men. They never saw anything all the way through. They thought putting the championship on a guy was making him, and that's not, you know, that's the first part of it. They had a company of half-made men because they never saw things all the way through. And you saw the stuff they invested in the most ended up being some of the greatest stuff, you know. And even, you know, Bobby Roode, James Storm, they invested a year into that. You know, I think a lot of people like that. Obviously, I got red hot at the time, and they decided to pull the trigger on that, which was a great decision. But then there was no follow-through. And before I even had a chance to really go and do anything with that opportunity, things changed. That's the nature of the wrestling business. And again, you control the things you control, which is, for me, when I step in between the ropes.
Right.
You know, or when I'm on commentary and nobody's handing me a script. Those are the things I'm going to focus on. And you know, and everybody else can judge for themselves what kind of value and quality I bring to the table.
Yeah, I think that the half-made man, this is really cool because it's quite often I'll talk to people, but I don't hear things that stand out to me the way that things are standing out to me in this conversation. And that, again, that concept is so true. It's a term that is so applicable to what I've been thinking. And it's like, I personally, as a viewer, think that putting a title on somebody is one of the last steps in the evolution of a character. I think that we look like somebody, for example, like Dusty Rhodes, and they made him a star by making him chase that belt. You know, we've seen that repeatedly throughout time. And putting a championship on somebody doesn't make them a star. It makes them a champion. And that's how I've always felt. That's why, not to diminish your success in the X division there, but I felt like so often the belt would just be on this person or that person, and nobody ever stood out to me. So it was like when somebody came along that actually stood out, they stood out.
And I think think the fact that I held it as long as I did is what helped establish me and helped make me viable at the next level. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, was at the time when I decided that Jeff Hardy was going to be the guy, Jeff Hardy didn't need the championship. Let's just be honest. He was their most over guy. He was their top merchandise seller. Why take your biggest tool and your biggest prop and give it to a guy who doesn't need it?
Absolutely.
See, me being established as a champion and actually retaining it at that point, Jeff Hardy could have made me.
Right.
And Jeff Hardy didn't need to be made. You could now have two top merchandise sellers. You could have two guys that you could have, you know, been top guys in the fans' eyes. And instead, they went a different direction. And a guy who didn't need it and probably didn't even want it, to be quite frank. But again, sometimes you have non-wrestling people making wrestling decisions, and that's what happens.
Yeah, in that scenario, I would 100% have gone the opposite direction. It would have been you finding ways to keep the belt and Jeff never getting it, or ultimately
even if down the road 2 or 3 months later you wanted to do that, you wanted to tell the great redemption story that they were trying to tell with Jeff after overcoming everything he did, which was a great story, don't get me wrong, it was. But again, before it was seen through, I was half made, and then I was unmade, and then the rest was history. And that was the last time anybody interrupted a WWE press conference at Comic-Con to ask about what was happening in TNA.
I see that now, too. I mean, I will say that one of the performers that they really did see through all the way, and I think it paid off big time for them, is EC3. He's gotten over fantastically. They did it right. They invested in him. They didn't put a championship on him right away. They let it be this whole build. It turned out great. Hopefully, they'll take notes from that, because I look what they did with Eli Drake. Eli Drake got thrown into the title picture before I even considered him a real challenger. And now I'm like, they're going to spend his entire time trying to establish him as a champion. It doesn't make sense. Whatever.
Well, I think it's part of society right now. We live in a fast food society, and there's 165 channels if you have the lowest tier of cable. So they think everything has to happen in 15, 20 seconds because people's attention spans aren't long enough to really follow something along. But if you really think about all the great television shows that have really resonated with people over the last 5 or 10 years, they're series, right? There's stuff people follow for 2 or 3 seasons. And could you imagine if you're watching Sons of Anarchy and you're really getting into it, and in season 2 they go, ah, you know what, we're not a motorcycle gang anymore. We're in the carpet cleaning business. And we just changed our mind. Yeah, and literally this happens in wrestling all the time, where we tell them that what happens really has no consequence, because it literally could change all next week, and everything we just made you invest it in no longer has any value. You look at that so many times in your fans, you feel like, well, why am I investing my time in something if nothing has any meaning? These matches have no real meaning at the end of the day. Why do I care about it? Why do I want to put my money down? If you're just going to undo it on Monday, then why did I spend all this time Sunday watching it happen? And it happens all the time. And we basically told people that the matches have no meaning, because literally whatever happens can just unhappen the day after. And we start and stop storylines. We, you know, characters change abruptly. You know, and that doesn't happen in real life. You know, and so there needs to be continuity. There needs to be consistency. And that hasn't always been the strong suit of this industry.
I was legitimately having that conversation last week with Kenny King. I was like, that, for example, that's why I was so glad when Jinder Mahal got the nice, like, length of a championship reign that he did, because otherwise, I mean, it took 3 months for people to even buy into it, and if they dropped it too soon, it would have just been absolutely pointless. And Impact does that too. There's a lot of, like, oh, I'm invested, and now that person's not even on contract anymore 2 months later, or, you know.
I had a trainer I was working with, and who became a friend of mine. And once he found out what I did, him and his family started watching wrestling. They hadn't watched in years, but once he started training me, you know, they thought it was cool to start watching and investing. This is when I was, you know, back in TNA. And after a few months and stuff, we had about a period of about a month or two where we didn't really work with each other. My schedule was busy. You had some things going on. And when we reconvened a couple of months later, he said, man, he said, I turned on Impact this week, and what the hell happened? Like, where is everybody? Like, I don't recognize anyone that's on TV. Like, what is all this stuff going on? What happened, you know? And so for him, he invested these months of watching it and getting in the storylines and the characters, and he literally missed a few weeks or a month, and when he turned it out, he didn't have any investment anymore, because everything he invested in had changed. And he stopped, he didn't continue to watch. You know, you can't waste people's time. And when you waste people's time, that listen, there's too many things that they can slip on and they can follow from season one to season six. And it's going to give them a progression and a logical progression to why things are happening. Yep. And wrestling needs to get back to that. You know, you can't just, you know, throw a bunch of shit at the wall and hope it sticks.
Kenny King said the exact words.
That's because I'm his mentor. Just because I taught him half of everything I know.
Well, I mean, and I agree with that. I mean, I look, for example, TNA's got a great roster for the most part right now based on the international people they're bringing in. But those people showed up legitimately in mass after over like 2 week period. I watch every episode, and I'm like 2 weeks into this like emergence or whatever. I was like, I don't even know these people. I have no emotional investment, and I'm sure they're maybe stars in Mexico or something, but I've never seen them before today, you know, or. It's great that these people are superstars in Japan, but I don't have the opportunity to follow that. Like, you can't just tell me people are a star and expect me to give a fuck. I mean, to be honest, to be blunt, it's like that's not the way it works. I have to have an emotional investment that is built over time.
Yep, I think sometimes the decision makers don't give the wrestling fans enough credit. Mm-hmm. They think that they don't see these things, or they're not smart enough to see some of the inconsistencies. And again, I started watching wrestling at 4 years old. And I was mature enough to appreciate and understand the things that were happening in front of me. You know, I think there's a lot of fans that are in that same boat.
Yeah, well, I've been watching since I was 8 years old, and that's about the same amount of time that you've been watching, 35 years, something like that. And the greatest storylines in history are the ones that had the most continuity and were given time to play out. In the 80s, sure. You know, Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes, that feud lasted the better part of a decade. And it's iconic as a result. They also didn't change the championship every 10 minutes between the two of them. Dusty got 3 times with that belt, and 2 of them were from Flair. So it's like, you know, it was something that we were given an opportunity, and the excuse that, oh, that's because we didn't have pay-per-views or this or that. Well, that's fine, but we had weekly TV shows still then. It played out just the same. I don't know. It's something that, obviously, yep, sir. I'm not in the industry on that level, and it's not for my decision-making, And like you, as a performer, all I can do is show up and do the best I can. And if I don't like it, I just change the channel and go to something else.
Yep, I agree. And there's plenty of other options out there.
Exactly. Now, Austin, thank you so much again. And I look forward to seeing what is to come from you. If you're listening out there, by all means, go and check out Food Fight, the new Austin Aries book that describes his journey. So what is it? Your plant-based journey from the bingo halls to the big time.
Yep, find it at AustinAriesBook.com. We'll have a Black Friday sale coming up, and you can also follow me on Twitter at AustinAries, and on my Instagram at AustinHealy, H-E-A-L-Y, my middle name, Aries. And you can keep up with everything going on. There's going to be lots of big stuff happening real soon, so make sure you're paying attention.
I can't wait. Thanks so much, and have a great day.
You as well. Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right, you guys, that is... I consider him legendary. Austin Aries, former Ring of Honor, 2-time Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. He's also an Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, record-setting 6-time X Division Champion, and a former World Tag Team Champion with Bobby Roode, who's now, of course, a superstar in the WWE. Thank you, Austin, for joining us. Go check out his book. You can pick it up at AustinAriesBook.com or just search it, Google it. It's Austin Aries Food Fight, my plant-based journey from the bingo halls to the big time. All right, I am Poyo Delmar, and that brings this episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Delmar to a close. Honey, you can stick a fork in me like this episode. I'm done.